ECO Report is a weekly public affairs program
providing independent media coverage
of environmental and ecological studies
with a focus on local, state, and regional people, issues, and events
in order to foster open discussion
of human relationships with nature and the earth
and to encourage you to take personal responsibility for living sustainably in the world.
ECO Report is produced by an independent team of volunteers
working at the studios of Community Radio WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
And financially supported by listeners like you.
Hello, and welcome to ECO Report. For WFHB, I'm Juliana Daly.
And I'm Don Guerra. Monroe County is buying timber from land donated by the U.S. Forest Service. The timber would allow the county to reconstruct portions of Hunters Creek Road in Hoosier National Forest's Deem Wilderness. Monroe County Commissioners approved the timber purchase in its meeting yesterday morning. The U.S. Forest Service donated Hoosier National Forest land for the project, but its regulations dictate that trees on the land cannot be donated. Monroe County officials approved the tree purchase in order not to delay the road project. But Commissioner Julie Thomas says she's concerned about mitigating the loss.
Are we mitigating this loss of trees elsewhere in the county or somewhere else in the county? Aren't we buying these trees because they have to come down for the road?
Yes, okay. That's my understanding.
Right, so typically when you do that, you mitigate it, and I want to make sure that that happens.
Among the trees being removed are black walnuts, oaks, and yellow poplars. Commissioner Patrick Stoffers says trees could be planted at plenty of other county sites to mitigate the loss at Hunters Creek Road. The commissioners agreed to fund that effort. The road project will reconstruct a mile-long segment of Hunters Creek Road in the Deem Wilderness area. According to the county's website, road construction will last from April through September. The commissioners' next meeting is scheduled for March 14th at 10 a.m. in the Nat U Hill room of the county courthouse.
Indiana conservatives are launching a new organization to advocate for renewable energy. The Indiana Conservative Alliance for Energy began Tuesday afternoon in Indianapolis. It is comprised of conservative Republican leaders from across the state. Tim Phelps, executive director for the Alliance, spoke about the organization's founding in a conference on Tuesday.
Conservation is a conservative idea, and as good citizens, it is our responsibility to leave the earth better than when we found it for future generations. The cost of renewable energy is decreasing significantly every year, and it is now more inexpensive than traditional energy choices, without government subsidies that pick winners and losers.
In a press release, the Indiana Conservative Alliance for Energy stated they will focus on, quote, conservative solutions to statewide energy policy that increasingly emphasize clean, efficient, reliable, and affordable energy sources, unquote. When it launched, the Conservative Alliance for Energy released the results of a poll of Indiana conservatives. It showed that nearly 60% of conservatives were more likely to support a candidate favoring renewable energy. The poll also claims over 85% of Republican conservatives believe the state should pursue a, quote, all of the above, end quote, policy that includes renewable sources like wind and solar.
According to their website, the DNR is taking public comment over the proposal to create a bobcat season, which would allow for a certain number of the native cats to be hunted. Indiana DNR Communications Director Marty Benson says the proposal comes after increased sightings of bobcats in the state.
Now there are enough bobcats to sustain a very limited hunting and trapping season. It would be within a fixed time with a quota, and the season would end once that quota was reached.
Benson says bobcat populations are mostly concentrated in the southern, hilly portion of the state. He says many residents of southern Indiana may not have seen one of the elusive native cats, even though their populations are growing.
Bobcats are primarily nocturnal. They prefer to hunt, but they also prefer to hunt around sunrise and sunset in dense woods well away from humans. So that would explain why they aren't generally seen, although they are around. The information we have indicates bobcats are common in southern Indiana, even though we don't have exact numbers. And based on the DNR's experience with managing other species and information from the 40 other states that have regulated bobcat seasons, the DNR is confident that limited regulated hunting and trapping of bobcats won't hurt the growth of or spread of bobcats in Indiana.
DNR biologists believe bobcat populations in southern Indiana are high enough to sustain a limited hunting season, and Benson says the season would allow for additional information to be collected. The DNR is taking public comment on the proposal until March 23rd. Comments can be made through the Indiana Natural Resources Commission website at in.gov/nrc.
The City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department is expecting to purchase almost 3 acres of property near Cascade Golf Course. According to the Parks and Recreation Department, it spent $400,000 to buy a former Buddhist monastery and the surrounding land, which is adjacent to Lower Cascades Park. The monastery was founded in 1996 by two well-known Tibetan Buddhist teachers. Parks and Rec Administrator Paula McDivitt said the monastery moved to a new address and the owners were willing to sell the former property. The department's plan for the space is to remove existing buildings and transform the grounds into a green space for Cascades Park. Williams says the department is still considering a use for the monastery building itself. He also says the purchase is a part of a larger project to connect parcels to the upper and lower Cascades parks.
The Trump administration wants to cut funding for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative by 90%. Yesterday and today, a coalition representing business, industry, and environmental organizations is meeting with congressional leaders in Washington, D.C. to protest the cut. Indiana has shorelines on Lake Michigan, meaning it has an interest in keeping the Great Lakes clean. The Great Lakes Initiative provides a substantial amount of funding for restoration projects, including pollution cleanup. In total, the initiative has funded over 3,500 projects across the Great Lakes region. The Great Lakes congressional delegation has a strong bipartisan history of supporting the initiative. Congress said that they were going to ignore Trump's proposal and would continue to support $300 million a year for restoration work.
Say's Firefly is now Indiana's state insect. Last Tuesday, a bill submitted by the students of West Lafayette's Cumberland Elementary School passed the Indiana House of Representatives 93-3. The bill passed in the state Senate unanimously. Governor Eric Holcomb championed the proposal on behalf of Cumberland students and vowed to sign it into law. Holcomb issued a statement saying, quote, "I know this bill has bugged some of my legislative friends, but the truth is it's a big deal to young students around the state who have reached out to us in support," unquote. The firefly, technically, is a beetle, is native to Indiana and named for Thomas Say. Say was a 19th century naturalist and is considered the father of American entomology.
Finally, for this week's headlines, the yearly count of monarch butterflies wintering in Mexico was just released. It shows a decrease from last year's count and confirms that monarch butterflies are very much at risk. Last year, the butterflies wintered on 6 acres of land. This year, only 5. Monarch populations declined by more than 80% in the past 2 decades. Tierra Curia, a senior scientist at the Center for Biological Diversity, said, quote, "We could lose the monarch butterfly if we don't take immediate action to rein in pesticide use and curb global climate change," end quote. For WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Juliana Daly. We love to hear from our listeners. Contact us about stories we've aired or if you have ideas for future stories. Please send emails to earth@wfhb.org. And now, It's time for Get Out and Hike, our segment showcasing the wonderful wild areas of southern Indiana and beyond.
This is Get Out and Hike, and I'm Jan Walker.
Hi, I'm Kathy Meyer. I'm a naturalist for Monroe County Parks and Recreation, and I'd like to tell you about the Karst Farm Greenway, which is a trail that was opened in 2014. It's 4.5 miles long now, but eventually will be extended to Ellettsville, and it will link up with the Heritage Trail in Ellettsville to almost double the length of that trail. So if you went out and back, you'd be doing 15 miles or so. The trail itself starts near the splash pad and the playscape at Karst Farm Park. There's a big parking lot there, restrooms, water facilities, and the whole trail is paved. There are some gentle rolling hills, but it is accessible. There are a few street crossings at places where there are lights and signs, so it's safe to cross. And the trail is really enjoyed by people of all ages. I see lots of people with their kids on their bicycles and strollers, joggers, folks of all ages and shapes and sizes can get out and enjoy it. And it goes along the road in places, but parts of it cut through woods and along farm fields and behind Highland Park School, Grandview School, and links a lot of destinations, including the Northwest Center for the YMCA is a little spur trail off to the side of that. It has mile markers every quarter mile, so if there are any safety concerns or emergencies you need to report, you can phone in and give them a mile marker for your location. And there is a Facebook page that folks might be interested called the Friends of Monroe County Greenways, and that would be a good place to go to get updates about any kind of progress on the Karst Farm Greenway or the other trails in the county system, which is really starting to expand. So I hope you get out this winter and take a walk on a nice clear trail and see part of Monroe County.
Thank you. Would there be any benches or, and also could someone maybe in a motorized wheelchair access these trails?
Yes, there are a few benches along the way. There are also some kiosks with some historic signs, interpretive signs along the way. The crossings are all at grade, accessible crossings. So except for somewhat hilly spots, it would be easy to get through with motorized wheelchairs or other wheeled vehicles.
This week, WFHB's Norm Holy speaks with Jeff Dukes about his work on climate assessments for Indiana.
This is Norm Holy from WFHB, and today I'm interviewing Professor Jeffrey Dukes, who is head of the Purdue Climate Lab. He's going to talk specifically about the release of their first review of issues in Indiana and broader.
At Purdue here, we have a center called the Purdue Climate Change Research Center, and we have about 80 to 90 faculty members involved with this center. For the past 2 or 3 years, we've been conducting an assessment of how climate change is going to affect the state of Indiana. With many, many collaborators and colleagues from around the state, including down there in Bloomington at IU, we started out with this assessment by going out to different stakeholder groups, what we call stakeholder groups, basically interested individuals and sectors of the state, and asking people who work in the energy industry or in health or as planners, et cetera, we were asking them, what do you need to know about climate in general in your sort of daily life for planning for your work? And what do you need to know about climate change to do the best possible job in planning for the future? So we went around the state and got feedback from them on many different sectors, and then we went out and found the top experts around the state in these fields and asked them if they would be willing to basically contribute their time towards producing an assessment that brings together the latest knowledge about how climate change will affect each of these sectors. And to the extent that we could, we wanted to specifically address the needs expressed by the stakeholders in these different sectors. So we had a bunch of feedback, and we got these expert groups together, and they came up with outlines of what they expected might be a useful product, and that went back to the stakeholders. So the stakeholders said, you know, either yes, this is what we were looking for, or no, actually we wanted some different information. And eventually now we've gotten to the point where we have drafts of most of these reports written that are confirmed to be what the stakeholders want, largely, and we're going through the review process with most of these right now. Last week, we released the first of the actual reports, and this is just the report that says what we expect Indiana's future climate to look like. So this report that we released first is sort of the basis of all these other reports that are looking at what the implications of that future climate will be. So we have lots of different climate variables that we've looked at within this first report. This report is just really laying those all out and laying out some of the dramatic changes in the hottest temperatures that we're going to get in Indiana, some of the changes in precipitation patterns we're expecting, that sort of thing. This assessment is based on, well, it's based on historical records. So we've been looking at the past climate in Indiana and how it's been changing up to the present. And then we're using basically the latest computer model outputs that are available from modeling groups from around the world to look at what the best guess as to the future climate is. We're using the output of what are known as the CMIP-5 models. Basically, what this is a round of comparisons of model outputs where the models are predicting what the future is going to look like given a couple different possible scenarios of how society functions. Do we as a society emit more greenhouse gases or fewer greenhouse gases? How much energy do we use in the future? How much fossil energy do we use in the future? How much land conversion is there? Based on these scenarios, we have basically a medium emission scenario and a high emission scenario out of this what's called CMIP-5 exercise. And we looked at the output of 10 different models from this exercise. And we're using those projections to then look at what Indiana's future might look like. We can't just take the raw output of those models and get a very sort of fine-scale picture of what we would expect in Indiana because they're pretty coarse. They have large grid cells, so basically the resolution is pretty low on those models because it's just too hard for the computers. It's too computationally intensive for the computers to run these models at really high resolution. There are just too many calculations to be done. It gets incredibly expensive. So there's the output from these models is relatively coarse when you're looking at something like the state of Indiana and trying to figure out what changes in climate are going to be from one spot to the next.
How fine a resolution is there? Do they basically predict something for the Midwest?
It's a little. Indiana would be represented by a couple grid cells, maybe, or pieces of a few grid cells. Not the sort of resolution you'd want if you wanted to say we expect that the future of Evansville might be like this, whereas South Bend might be like this. And if you want to get some reasonable variation within the state, you need to do a little bit more work, essentially. And so that's where we do something called downscaling. There's a process called statistical downscaling that we use to sort of apply known statistical relationships in climate from one part of the state to another part of the state and apply those to the output of these models to get higher resolution and more realistic pattern of variation across the state.
So you can take it down to more regional within the state assessments.
Right, exactly. So we can give a best estimate of what the future is going to look like for a given county within Indiana. Now, that shouldn't be confused with our being extremely accurate on what the future is going to be within that county. There are a bunch of reasons that we can't give a perfect prediction for the future. For one thing, we just don't know how much greenhouse gas we will emit as a society in the future that's going to be driving these changes. For another thing, the models certainly are not perfect. They've all got some level of difference of opinion in how exactly to represent the world and the climate-relevant processes that we have in the world. So there are all these different visions for what the future might look like depending on the exact model, and none of them's perfect. But what we end up doing is taking an average of these 10 models and using that as our sort of most likely projection for the future based on a given scenario for greenhouse gas emissions. And then we apply that to Indiana and give it the sort of the geographic integrity in terms of the patterns that we already know exist within the state in terms of climate, warmer in the south than it is in the north, patterns of rainfall that vary across the state, this sort of thing. It's what we're doing is we're creating a best estimate for the state that's at a high resolution, even though there's certainly a range of possible future climates that we could end up having.
What results did you put in the first report for Indiana?
Yeah, in the first report for Indiana, we put a lot of results that have to do with temperature and precipitation and extreme climate. You know, one of the striking patterns that we see over time in Indiana is that temperature has been getting warmer in many seasons, not as much in summer recently as in other seasons, but there has been a low and steady increase in temperature, and that increase in temperature has picked up on average over the last 50 years or so. It's been happening faster. At the same time, we also see changes in precipitation. So Indiana's gotten a lot wetter in general, and particularly, again, in the past 50 years or so, it's gotten quite a bit wetter. On average, the precipitation within state has gone up by 5 or 6 inches a year over the last 120 years or so. The state's quite a bit wetter than it used to be, something like 15% wetter on average, and a bit warmer.
Thank you for the interview. I've been speaking with Professor Jeffrey Dukes, head of the Climate Lab at Purdue. Thank you very much for your contribution.
Are you looking for a way to take action on environmental issues? Eco Report is seeking volunteer reporters to contribute short headline news stories as well as feature interviews. We provide all the technical training you'll ever need. WFHB also offers internships. Give us a call at 812-323-1200 or email us at earth@wfhb.org. And now, we'll hear In Nature.
This is In Nature.
Monarchs are one of our most easily recognized and beloved butterflies. Their long trip to overwinter in the mountains of southern Mexico has thrilled people of all ages who see in this tiny, fragile creature a remarkable endurance. Monarchs have several broods during the breeding season, and it is only the last that wends its way southwest. The larvae's sole food are leaves of milkweed plants that once thrived along roads and borders of farms. Milkweeds contain cardioactive compounds, which sicken animals that try to eat them and which are mildly toxic to humans. The monarch, however, is immune to these poisons and actually incorporates them into their tissues so that they, too, are toxic to insectivores. Roundup herbicides, habitat destruction, and weed-free culture of our roadsides has caused a precipitous decline in the numbers of these butterflies. Adding milkweed to your garden will encourage monarch females to lay her eggs and provide the larva with sustenance. It will also enable you to see the wonders of metamorphosis as this humble caterpillar transforms itself into the beautiful butterfly.
You've been listening to In Nature, a production of WFHB in Bloomington, Indiana.
Here are a few things happening this week in our listening area. The Indiana Maple Syrup Weekend is on Saturday, March 10th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The weekend will take place at the Hinkle Garden Farmstead on East 10th Street in Bloomington. You will have the opportunity to tour the sugaring operations and learn about the process and sample refreshments made with maple syrup.
If you want to learn more about bees, come to the Backyard Conservation Program on Saturday, March 10th from 2 to 3 p.m. at the Woodlawn Shelter in Bryan Park. Learn about a bee's vital role in our environment and assemble your very own conservation project. Please register by March 3rd at bloomington.in.gov/parks.
The Indiana Birding Crash Course is at McCormick's Creek State Park on Saturday, March 17th from 9 a.m. to noon. Join the Indiana Audubon Society for a 3-hour birding workshop. Learn birding techniques, the best optics, common birds, and more in a fun and informational setting. Visit www.indianaaudubon.org to register.
There will be a tour of Cave River Valley on Saturday, March 17th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Meet Tony Earle in Spring Mills Donaldson Shelter parking lot to carpool about 15 minutes to the valley. Come prepared for rugged hiking that includes going up and down hills and crossing streams, and be sure to bring a water bottle.
A program on the Woodpeckers of Indiana will be presented at Brown County State Park on Saturday, March 17th, from 2 p.m. to 2:45 p.m. Afterwards, attendees may spend some time in the bird observation room with the naturalists and see if they can catch a glimpse of Indiana's woodpeckers in the wild. And that wraps up our show for this week. Eco Report is brought to you in part by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This week's news stories were written by Sarah Vaughn, Wes Martin, Linda Green, and Norm Holy. Norm Holy produced our feature. Jam Walker produced Get Out and Hike, and Cindy Bolle edited the segment.
My co-anchor, Juliana Daly, compiled our events calendar. Kirsten Payton engineers the show and edits our audio. Rebecca Mueller and Andrew Brown edited the script. Producer is Rebecca Mueller. Executive producer is Wes Martin. And for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Juliana Daly. Join us on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. and Fridays at 5 p.m. for our weekly radio rundown of ecological news. You can also access headline news and feature audio from our show anytime on the WFHB website.
You've been listening to the Eco Report,
a volunteer-powered production of Community Radio WFHB
in Bloomington, Indiana.
Available for download and podcast at news.wfhb.org.
Eco Report is your independent, ecologically inspired news source
for South Central Indiana,
bringing you news that the Earth wants you to hear.
Send your comments, suggestions, and story ideas
directly to the Eco Report staff.
The email address is
earth@wfhb.org.
That's earth@wfhb.org.